In today's solo episode, I'm going to answer a question on anti-racism or allyship from our Inclusion First community. Now, these episodes are really made to get you the information that you need so that you can go and make greater change in the world. These are real questions from real people. And my goal here is to break down the question, give some answers and some insights that you can hopefully put to use as you are out there navigating your life, navigating opportunities for anti-racism, for allyship, and to really bring more inclusion into the spaces that you exist in. So here we go. So Rebecca, we like to do a community question, something that someone submits to the Inclusion First Institute that they are wondering about. And I have a really good one for us today. So the question is, I want to be an ally, but I don't know where to start. Other than standing up when I see something glaringly wrong, how do I get started? That's the question. How would you answer that?
So I think this is a really interesting question. I think people struggle with allyship in part because they think about it as this thing that exists outside of themselves that they have to do or they have to be. And that's not really the reality. I mean, if you are an ally, if you identify as an ally, the reason that you do that is because you love and care about people who need your support and who need you to use your positions of power to support, to help them, to elevate their voices, to do things like that. And so the real key to allyship is to build relationships with people who are not like you. Like, I mean, there's not a quick way into that. I think that standing up against injustice is an essential act, particularly of people who, for people who have any kind of power, just either inherently in the social system or because of the position that they're put in. But the reality is that change happens most at the individual level. And so if you want to be an ally, then you need to be willing to go in spaces that are uncomfortable to you, to build relationships with people who are not like you. And you can start pretty easy. I mean, oftentimes there are people in your circle of acquaintance, people of color, people who are relatives, friends, things like that, that you can start by getting to know them. And it has to be real. It has to be authentic, right? I can't just be like, oh, I need friends who are not white, so I'm going to go start find the closest black person and ask them about their life and about their experience. So I will tell you, as somebody who is a white person married to a black person, that can be really wounding, right? When things got really weird around George Floyd, my husband, who has a very high visibility as an artist in a lot of circles where black people are just not very present. A lot of people messaged him like, how can I support you? What can I do? And it was really anxiety inducing for him. And one, because he didn't know how to respond to them. He feels his social awkwardness a lot. And so to be put into a position where people were expecting him to somehow give voice to what to do, that, and he was dealing with so much of his own pain, right? And so trying to figure out how to tell somebody how to help him or how to help people who are like him when he was still trying to process what it meant to him that this thing happened. I mean, my husband never ever watched the recording of the death of George Floyd because he was like, I don't need to go there. I don't need that trauma. I know that fear. I know that danger. There's no reason to go and watch it. And so people would ask him about like, did you see? And he's like, no, like I am trying not to. But for him in processing his own grief and anger at that experience, he did a screen print where he connected the images of an African American man. And it says, what's the slogan from the Memphis trash? People say, I am a man, I think. And then the person is wearing a mask and it says, I can't breathe, right? Wearing like a COVID mask. And for him, like he was trying to figure out how did he want to express how he feels about that, right? Like this is not a new thing. Black men have been trying to show their personhood for years, for decades, for centuries. And now it's not only is he carrying around that burden on his chest, right? But now he actually can't breathe. Right. And my husband also has respiratory problems. So COVID was very scary for him just in its of itself. And so those people who wanted to care for him by just reaching out and asking him, how can I care for you, was not particularly helpful. But there were people who loved him, who came alongside him and just said, I love you and I am glad that you're here. And I am so sorry that you have to walk in fear like this, that we have, that we live in a world and in a community where people think that you are dangerous. And my husband's very sweet, very non-confrontational on so many levels. And he's the last person that you would expect to be violent or do anything like that. I mean, he very deliberately, as a teenager, chose not to be involved in hip hop culture because he felt like it was too violent and too demeaning to women. Mm-hmm. I mean, which I think is pretty amazing for a, you know,
yeah, for a teenager,
15, 16 year old male person to have that awareness that that's important. And so, you know, he's been coming out of that his entire life, and to know that people see him as a threat was really, has always been a very heavy burden for him. And so what he needed to know was that people loved him, that people cared about him, that people wanted to be with him, and that they weren't afraid of him. And he couldn't tell them how to care about them more, care about, you know, how to be in the situation. But the people who had a genuine relationship with him strengthened that relationship by showing that love and care. And so there's never an easy way to start friendships. I mean, it's hard when you're an adult. Like when you're not at school and you're not on the playground, it's a lot harder to get things going. But if you're willing to make yourself vulnerable to people who you don't know very well, but who you want to know and genuinely want to know them as individuals, if they choose to invite you into that space of intimacy, it gives you a place to begin to understand what it is like as an ally. But it requires being willing to be uncomfortable. When Carrie and I were talking before, one of the things we talked about is how Black people live constantly in spaces where they're made to feel other and where they're not like the people around them. And sometimes white people are afraid to go into those non-white spaces because they're afraid of being othered. And I had a wonderful African-American literature professor who was an African-American man who told me in no uncertain terms that I needed as a white woman to be willing to be uncomfortable. I was teaching something out of Zora Neale Hurston's book, Their Eyes Were Watching God. And the entire book is written in dialect. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I feel really like this maybe not be appropriate as a white woman to stand up and read an excerpt out of this book. And so we talked about code switching and what it's like to have to live in a world where the way that you speak or the way that you know the world is not okay. And that it is totally appropriate for me to put myself in situations where I feel awkward and where things are complicated in order to show love to those people who are not like me.
Oh my gosh.
And in order to, and in order to learn about that, and that I needed to be willing to do that. And I really think,
a mentor.
Yeah, no, he was amazing. And I have Vershawn changed the way that I see the world on many levels. But that challenge was really important to me. And I feel like anybody who really is committed to allyship, and whether it's over racial issues or gender issues or anything like that, the key always is that you have to have place in your heart for people who are in those spaces and who have to battle those battles, because you can't really care about the outcomes if you don't have skin in the game or literally your heart in the game. Mm-hmm. Right. And so you can do all kinds of intellectual activities to try to understand racism and oppression. But what really matters is when you choose to love people who are different than you and you choose to bear the cost of that love. And so that's where you always have to start. And that begins with your own vulnerability and your willingness to be wrong and your willingness to feel awkward and your willingness to be judged. Because the reality is, those people around you who are struggling under oppressive situations, they don't owe you anything. They don't owe you their personal story. They don't owe you a relationship. And some of them have been really burned by white people who have used them as a token to show their, you know, their non-racist. Yeah. And nobody wants to be the token person of color. And so they may be really hesitant to let you into those intimate spaces or to anything more than a surface acquaintanceship. And if you really want that relationship, you have to be willing to persevere. You have to be willing to show love continually, even if there's no reciprocal relationship there. You have to be willing to be the pursuer in a caring and thoughtful way, because otherwise they don't know if they can trust you. They don't know if they want to have you in their life, because they don't know if you're just coming in because it's cool right now, right, to identify as an ally. And if you're going to be there 5 years from now when nobody is going to pat your back for being an ally, but they really need someone to help them navigate the oppressive racial hierarchy at their work or deal with the racial injustice of their neighborhood, or help them because they've been left on the side of the road by their lover and they need somebody to be willing to take them in. And people are going to look at you funny when they see somebody who is a person of color coming in and out of your house at all different times of the day and night. Like, those kinds of things are real questions. And if you aren't really willing to go there and work on those relationships in the beginning, there it raises the question about whether your allyship is something that is really for the people who need allies, or if you're just using it as a way to bolster your own identity.
Ooh, you said so many good things. That was deep AF. Like, seriously, it was so good. I'm like, I have nothing else to add to that. But I do. I think the key is, like, authentic relationships. This is not something that you can fake. The way anyone couldn't come into your life and, like, that person seems nice, but there's something off about them. Like, we're very good at those feelers and that intuition. And so how can you develop authentic and real relationships that aren't forced? Putting yourself in those situations, finding spaces where there are people who are different from you and shared interests, and then finding the people that you click with, that you like, because guess what? Even if you don't have any friends of color, there are people who are like you, who think like you, who laugh like you, who are interested in the same things as you. And there are friends, potential friends, in all shades and colors and shapes and sizes and sexual identities and orientations. and that's sure. The beautiful thing of the world. And so how do you, have the bravery and courage, if this is something completely new and foreign to you, to go out and explore the world and find those people who are like you and take off that filter of, you know, whiteness, essentially, like only white. Take that filter off and really step into the spectrum of humans that exist out there and find those authentic connections and pursue them in a real way.
Mm-hmm. But being friends is hard. So just remember that. I mean, it's true in all your relationships, right? Intimacy, it's a lot of work and it makes you vulnerable. And so you got to choose where that energy is going to go. And I will say that my personal experience is that one or two really authentic relationships goes a much longer way in helping you to be present for people who need, who can benefit from you amplifying their voices or from you lifting them up into spheres where you have influence, than it does to try to befriend 25 people who you think might be a possible, you know, might help grow your circle of acquaintance or whatever, your circle of influence. And a totally practical note, when you said this, Carrie, reminded me, if you are having trouble meeting people who are not like you, one of the best ways to do it is through meetups. I don't know how many of you have ever done that, but it's groups that are based around shared interests. And I have met some really fascinating people through, like, board game meetups or cosplay meetups or people who like Jane Austen or people who like gardening. Like, you just never know. But also, one of the ways to find those people is to follow people on social media who have interests that you're interested in who are not white people. So I love gardening and I love everything around, like, permaculture and that kind of thing. And oh my gosh, my brain just totally, I couldn't remember the name. Soulfire Farms collective that is working to right justice issues around agriculture, and in particular to get more African Americans back into small scale agriculture, because they used to be one of the largest percentages.
Oh, so of ironic.
And now they are, like, the most minority represented in agriculture. So I could follow anybody who talks about gardening and agriculture, but choosing to follow Soulflower Farms and seeing what they're doing allows me to connect with a community full of people who care about the things that I care about. They care about permaculture. They care about ecology. They care about, you know, being good stewards of the earth. And they are not approaching it from a white dominant perspective. And so, one, they help me to understand those issues in a new way. But two, it automatically puts me in a circle of acquaintance with people who could potentially be friends, people who I could make connections with, who already love something that I love. It's easier to be friends with somebody. I think C.S. Lewis talks about this in The Four Loves, about friendship being that relationship where you are side by side moving towards the same thing, right? That romantic love is about being face to face. But friendship is about being side by side together. Mm-hmm. And so you want to look for spaces where you can do that, where you can be side by side with somebody who is not like you, but who loves something also that you love.
I love it. Thank you so much, Rebecca. Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast.
We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to theinclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We would love to get your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review wherever you find us. Thank you again so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time.